Welcome to the Fitness and Lifestyle Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Kennedy, and you tune in today because you're sick of trying every fad diet under the sun and training yourself into the ground without seeing any results. That's why I'm here, to share the most effective ways to eat and train for sustainable and real results. What's up, legends? Welcome back to this week's episode of the Fitness and Lifestyle Podcast. Got a cracking show for you today, and I'm joined by guest Dylan Roos. Now, we talk about all things men's health and wellness, leadership, mental health, the role that, you know, having structure and routine in your mental health plays in how you actually feel from day to day, and how important it is to have that structure, just as it would be with your physical health when we go to the gym and the way we eat and train and whatnot. But there's a lot of value in today's show. Now, for those of you that don't know who Dylan is, he's an accredited health coach and NLP master practitioner. He's a co-founder of the Roos Men's Wellness and Leadership Club, which he runs with his old man, Paul, which aims to provide a safe place for men to come together and explore all aspects of mindfulness and business. He is also one of Melbourne's leading advocates for mental health awareness, which he speaks at multiple schools and companies, which we'll chat about in today's show. But it is a very enjoyable episode, and I think there's a lot of value there for not only the men listening, but also the females, so the ladies as well. So sit back, relax, and enjoy today's show. As always, if you do take some value from this episode, please do take a screenshot and post it up on your Instagram story for me. Tag myself and tag Dylan. I'll have all his social links in the show notes below. But for now, let's get stuck into today's chat.
What are you training today?
Yeah. What am I training today? Chest and triceps.
Of course.
Chest and triceps. Strength.
It's Monday.
International Chest Day.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, guys, we are here with Dylan. As I've just mentioned in the intro, he sounds like a very important man, and we're both sitting across from each other in a room at the meditation room at the moment.
Mum's meditation room.
It feels quite good. So I think we've set the tone. I reckon it's going to be a good chat. So, mate, let's kick things off with I guess I want to get your description of the modern day man.
Yeah.
You know, that's for those. I'll have a link to all your socials and your website and stuff in the show notes, and people can go through and have a look at your blogs and stuff like that. I was looking at a few of them this morning, and we've obviously chatted about it. But what is that? What does that term mean to you?
I think we're living in an interesting time now where it is shifting, and there is no real definition right now. Like I see and I speak with a lot of men, and they're all really lost in terms of like their place in society, their place at home, in their day-to-day life. Like, what is the modern day man? And for me, it is, I guess, an amalgamation of so many different aspects. And today we're transitioning out of that more stoic, more get stuff done, don't think about it man, into the more, the one who feels more, who thinks a little bit more about what he does and shares why he does it, shares more, And it's kind of, you look at the different generations and how we're acting, it's kind of starting with our generation, I guess, of coming up, and this is, you know, we share a lot more, at least in my circles with my mates, and I talk to Dad and he's like, oh, I would never have a conversation like that with my mates or anything like that, so...
In the past, and now
you see them, the older generation, shifting and kind of catching up a little bit and sharing more. And so I think the modern day man is someone who is in touch with his emotions, but doesn't become overwhelmed by his emotions. So whereas in the past, the standard male was one who was very strong and... not necessarily didn't feel, but didn't feel like they could feel.
Or didn't want to recognize that they felt.
Yeah, and didn't want to recognize their emotions or kind of, I guess, talk about them.
Mm.
And now we're in the place where the modern day man definitely feels, but we're still transitioning to, hey, it's okay that you do, and this is how you feel, and this is what you do with those emotions. Because there still isn't a massive platform, and as you know, I'm really passionate about it in helping create that platform, is... platform for men to be able to express themselves and learn the tools to better handle their emotions.
It's an interesting point you bring up about how it's kind of it's going like the opposite way, whereas in the past, you know, your old man would teach you what it's like to be a man, and you just replicate everything that they've done,
exactly,
and they'd hand it all down, and like you've just said, now it's not something I've actually thought about, but now it's almost the opposite. Obviously, you still learn everything from your old man and the way you get brought up from your parents and stuff. But I guess we are the first ones to be doing it.
Yeah.
Which is then you see that ripple effect going up now.
Yeah, exactly right. And it's
still do have the bit of the population that just won't have a bar of it.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
just that will never really understand, because that's the way they've always been brought
exactly.
up. But it is having a bigger positive effect at the moment, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I think it's the biggest thing is the social media, but like the internet as well.
Yeah.
Just being able to have a message, and back in the day, my message would be spoken to just my immediate circle. Now, the average day guy can have a message and spread that to, you know, 40,000 people just through Instagram, like as you know. So
even this, like being able to have a chat
podcast, exactly. And then to be able to go in depth, like I was listening to like a Joe Rogan podcast, and they were talking about how the different forms of media have changed, and whereas all discussion was TV based, so it'd be a 5 minute interview. Now you can chuck on a podcast and listen to, you know, you and I debate a topic for an hour and go really
well. I actually haven't listened to it yet, but he did an interview recently with Bernie Sanders.
I listened to it,
and
really
like,
good.
Like that's been labelled as like the one interview that will literally change podcasting forever. Like apparently the effect that's had on his popularity in the States has been like nuts, because people have actually had a chance to understand what he is actually about, who he is, without, you know, I guess, you know, reporters having their select questions about what they want to hear, and then that's the message he gets reported to.
Yeah, I didn't know that, but I listened to the podcast. It's really good, and it is. He does give Bernie a platform to go really deep on like what he wants to change in America.
So what kind of initially got you into, or I guess made you want to be able to have an impact on more people other than yourself, and I guess what led you down the path of putting mental health and men's kind of wellness first before the whole kind of like, obviously you're right into the gym like myself. We've done a few sessions together.
I'm not as good looking as you though, mate. You know, I'm still chasing
debatable,
that Danny
debatable.
Kennedy fitness.
And I think as well, what a lot of people get confused with when they hear about mental health, and when they hear someone talking about mental health and how it's all right to share your feelings and stuff, is that they automatically think that means that you can't be that big, strong gym goer as well.
Yeah.
Like you can't have both.
Yeah, yeah.
It's almost like if you're right into your mental health and your meditation and all that stuff, then you're
soft or you're weak. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but it's the complete opposite, isn't it?
I think absolutely.
More and more now, you're starting to see those guys that have always been the ones that don't share
exactly
their feelings, starting to make a change.
Yeah, and you see it a lot with sports like that, because obviously they've got the most most eyes on them. So you see it with all these big, strong males coming out and saying, hey, I'm not okay. And that kind of sparks the conversation throughout society. But it is something that is really interesting to watch as more and more of those kind of guys do, because the way I explain it best is vulnerability is not weak. So to be vulnerable actually takes tremendous strength.
Strength, yeah.
And it more strength to not be. So, and I use the conversation of how are you doing. It's super easy to say, yeah, good, thanks, how are you? It's really hard to open up to your mates or your close family members or friends and say, you know what, I'm not doing so good. And this is what's going on in my life. And you know what, can I have some help, or can you listen to me for a bit?
Yeah.
That takes tremendous strength. And that is one of the key shifting points in that conversation around mental health. That as well as this idea, I think, because mental health or mental illness is what is always spoken about when it comes to mental health.
Yeah.
There's such a negative kind of like, well, I don't have mental health, or I don't know. It's like everyone has physical health just like everyone has, everyone has mental health just like everyone has physical health.
Yeah.
It's just sometimes it's better one day and sometimes it's not as good the other.
Yeah.
So that the conversations need to change around those two points, in that it's actually really shows a tremendous amount of strength to speak up, talk about your issues. If you need to go seek professional help. And that's kind of what got me, to answer the first part of your question, into this area was, you know, I went through a really dark period in my life about 4-5 years ago now, where I went through a breakup and just didn't have the tools necessary to handle it. And so at the time, I thought I was okay and I thought I was fine.
Yeah.
And in reality, I was going out, drinking 3 times a week, not exercising, eating really poorly, But the way I viewed it was, well, I'm 20 years old and this is kind of the normal thing to do.
Everyone else is doing it.
But what I didn't realize was I didn't take the time to check in with myself and say, how am I going? So yeah. That basically led up to a point in my life where I failed all five of my uni subjects. I was drinking, as I said, 3 times a week, not exercising at all, eating really poorly. And then I woke up one day hungover in bed, and I didn't get out of bed for the entire day. Just stayed in bed all day, went back to sleep, and the next day I remember waking up and going, okay, that's not normal behavior for anyone. Yeah. So I was able to become self-aware through a relatively speaking short period of time. This is over probably 6 months or so. And managed to go seek professional help straight away. I never kind of felt like, I guess some people might have, like, oh, there's something wrong with me. I need to seek help. It was just like, these guys are professionals. Yeah. I'm going to go speak to them. They know better than me. And the guy did say, he's like, well, you're showing signs of depression and anxiety. And this is kind of what we can do from here. And that sparked my personal journey of getting on top of my mental health and working on my mental illness. Yeah. So that's what sparked everything. That was about 4 or 5 years ago, and up until this day, I'm still constantly working on my mental health and working on better ways to combat my mental illness. And that's what makes me so passionate about this space, is knowing that I may have some tools that other people don't have, just because I've been working on it for 4 to 5 years. And if I can go out there and help other people that are struggling like I had previously, then that's absolutely a responsibility that I have to take on.
Yeah. And it's, like you said, especially if you've got, I guess, a reputation, or you're known as someone that doesn't usually share things, it can be pretty daunting to actually speak up and do it. And even like I've seen someone a couple of times, just about, you know, numerous different things. And even that, like, in my head, I knew that it was already 1 or 2 years.
Yeah.
Not too late, but like 1 or 2 years overdue.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then just after that first time, you realize that it should have happened 1 or 2 years ago.
Well, I speak quite openly on it, on my socials, and I feel so much better. Like, I'm not in a bad place, I'll still go, you know what, it's been a while since I've done a checkup session. I'll just go check up, and I leave and I'm like, wow, actually I had quite a bit to say, or get off my chest or whatever. And it is really good to have mates that you can talk to, and I've got all that, and I've got a really great support network. But there is just something about going and speaking to a professional that they can give you a outsider's perspective, or something that can kind of change or shift your perspective. And I always feel so much better.
And you touched on it before, and this is something that I've realized as well, is that your mental health, like, I've always, from when I've been young, and you would have been the same, and most guys would be that are into sport in particular, you're always taught that if you want to, you know, achieve a certain physique, if you want to improve your athletic ability or get better at sport, it's something that needs to be worked on day in, day out.
Exactly right.
And you know in yourself that if you take a week off the gym, you feel physically not as strong, you feel not as fit, and you feel like you've gone backwards.
Yeah.
It's exactly the same with your mental health.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, I set the goal. I've mentioned on the show a few times how I set a goal, January 1st of 2017, to meditate every single day, regardless of whether it was for a minute, 10 minutes, 15 minutes, whatever it was. And that's something I've done without fail every single day since then. And that's made me realize the importance of it. And you know, even journaling and stuff now, I'm starting to notice more and more that the days that, you know, like, and this is something I just got back from a retreat in Bali, and talking with people there about how important it is to have your structure with your mental health.
Yeah,
as well as it is to have your, just as you would with making sure, you know, you're going to the gym enough times per week.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And you can notice straight away.
Yeah.
When you're not doing all the things that you should be doing.
Exactly. Yeah.
That does have an effect. And it's not until you start doing it that you realize that you should have been doing it this whole time.
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah. Me and my mates, like, whenever we call each other, or me and one of my mates specifically, whenever we buzz to say, "How you going, mate?" whatever, or we call each other, say, "I'm not doing so well." We're at the stage now where we keep each other accountable, in that the first thing, if he goes, "I'm not feeling too hot," rather than focusing on the problem, where we now go, "Well, have you meditated today?"
Yeah.
"No." "Have you exercised today?" "No."
Yeah.
"Would you eat yesterday?" "Oh, I had a Big Mac."
It's like, shit, yeah,
no,
yeah.
What? No, it's like, okay, mate, like, I'm here for you. Let's talk about what's going on. But that's why you're feeling bad.
Yeah.
It's
start with that first.
Start with that first. If you look at your daily habits,
that will reflect your mindset, and that will reflect, like, I know you practice gratitude every day, and you get a lot of the people around you to practice gratitude. That's a huge thing, like, and an extension of that is just your general perspective on life. Like, everyone's heard the cliches, life is 10% what happens to you, 90% how you handle it. But they're cliches for a reason. And I think that's something that is super important in terms of, one, look after yourself, but I see it a lot for both men and women. It's people sit with their problems for too long, and it's like really good to talk it out as a first healing point.
Yeah.
But then it's like, okay, what's the solution? What are you going to do about it? Feel well, but what are you going to do?
Yeah. Reverse engineer.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah. So get, and I like, your daily habits are so important. So for me and for majority of people are exercising, eating right, and meditating.
Yeah.
And then, as you touched on, journaling is like, there's a lot of research on journaling and the benefits of journaling now. And getting your thoughts down on paper.
Yeah. And again, I was, you know, a couple of things, I was talking to someone again over this past week about how I personally think that they should start a podcast. And it may not be a podcast, it could be journaling, it could be just frequently, you know, every single week talking to a mate the same day, same place, over coffee or whatever. But like, you actually expressing things that you're feeling, regardless of whether you think it's important or not, or whether you want to talk about it or not, not only will help you, but could also be helping a lot of people around you.
Yeah, exactly.
You
know what I mean?
Because if you're, let's say for example, it's a partner and you've been, you know, you haven't been feeling yourself or whatever it is, and in your head you kind of know why, but you're not expressing it to them. They're just trying to figure out what the fuck's going on.
Exactly. Like,
what am I doing wrong, and why is it me or whatever. But at least if you're expressing that, you can then maybe help someone else understand that you're may not necessarily be in a good spot at the moment. So it gives the other person the understanding that they need to take that into account.
Absolutely.
Even things like that. And then with the gratitude, I might just touch on, because I know I talk about it a lot on the podcast, but someone said to me, where did I hear? I might have heard it on a podcast or something. Might have been, can't remember who it was. Might have been Robin Sharma, said that when you're doing your gratitude, it's not just, you know, grateful that I've got a sick car and, you know, a cool house and all that shit. Yeah, it's like, if right now, if you wrote down everything that you're grateful for, and I said, all right, whatever's not on the list is gone, like, then what would you write down?
You know
what I mean?
Yeah.
It could be things as simple as, you know, having all your senses, all your limbs, whatever it is. Water, music, whatever.
Exactly,
it is.
Roof over your head.
Yeah, it's deeper than just like materialistic shit.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. And then you can go like deeper into that gratitude practice with the law of attraction, because that is kind of the basis for the law of attractions, is whatever you think will bring more into it.
Manifestation,
all that. And I was listening to a YouTube video today, and there's such a big misconception around it. And it's all about like, I want a Porsche, I want a bigger house, I want this, and what the universe does is it just says yes, basically. And that's what this video was saying. So if you're saying I want more money, the universe is saying yes, you do want more money. So your language around it, this guy was saying, has to be pretty specific. It has to say, pretend like you already have it. I have more money. I have more friends. I have more joy. And then the universe goes, yes, you will have more joy, or you will have more of that. And that's the best way to cultivate, I guess, that law of attraction, is through speaking in terms of you already have it. And you hear Tony Robbins talk about that all the time, and a bunch of other gurus.
Grant Cardone is one that I listen to. He's the same. When he writes down his goals, he doesn't write down like, you know, I want 40 apartments. I own 40 apartments. And it's not only like, you know, it sound, for those that are listening and you hear like the manifestation and stuff like that and the law of attraction, you think, oh, like, just, it's bullshit. But it's not, because
it's not.
You tell yourself these things, and then you start to notice that your actions are different. Like you said, your language is different. Exactly. The people you surround yourself is different. And that has a huge impact, doesn't it?
Well, the best analogy I've heard is your mind is like a factory. So what are you putting into that factory is gonna then manufacture out on the other side. So if you're putting in like crap, you're gonna manufacture crap. If you're putting in really good quality videos, thoughts, readings, podcasts, friendship groups, it's gonna produce really good outcomes.
It's like that that other cliche saying, you know, whether or not you believe you can or you can't, either way you're right.
Exactly right,
And it's so true. Like the power of even just positive self-talk and positive thoughts compared to negative is just unbelievable.
I've never heard a single successful person not attribute some of their success to visualization or gratitude or some form of that law of attraction. Conor McGregor, athlete, any successful businessman, Grant Cardone, you said, Tony Robbins, like they all say, well, I have this practice and I do it.
Yeah.
So I don't know how people still success hold the blue. I don't know. Like, because there are people out there that are like, oh, that's a bunch of bullshit. And it's like, who are you talking to? Like, are you talking to successful people that are attain this? Are you talking to your uncle who's maybe not that successful? Or you're talking to the garbage man or something like that? You know, like, who are you talking to?
Yeah, exactly. You mentioned before, or you touched on kind of the fact that I do the goals and gratitude and meditation and stuff. Do you have like a daily routine or a ritual that you try and stick to?
Yeah, so now my daily routine at the moment, I've just changed since I got back from overseas. So I used to be a 6 hour a night sleep man, and then I listened to Joe Rogan with Matthew Walker, and now I am religious in my 7 hours minimum.
Yeah.
So as long as I get my 7 hours, I'll get up basically depending on when I go to sleep, I'll just 7 hours. So at the moment I get up at 4:30.
Yeah.
So I'm in bed by, like, I'm asleep by 9:30 basically. Cool. So that's good. I get my 7 hours. Yeah. I'm at 4:30. I love to work out first thing in the morning, so I go work out. Come back, meditate, and then I'll go like walk down, grab a coffee, maybe take the dog for a walk, listen to a podcast, something like that. So my day is very much around personal development, I guess you could say, or just looking after myself first, and then 8 a.m. is when I want to be like hitting the emails, doing my work kind of thing. Yeah.
Have you read Robin Sharma's 5 a.m. Club?
No, I haven't.
I'll lend it to you.
Yeah, good.
Yeah. You really like it.
Yeah.
You're already half an hour ahead of him anyway. So
well, even like, again, you said success leaves clues. It's like The Rock gets up at 4 a.m., Mark Wahlberg 4:30, E.T., that motivational speaker, 4 a.m. Like, no one's out there going, I get up at 9 a.m.
Yeah.
Like, and I'm successful.
Yeah, sleep as long as possible.
Yeah, yeah. Warren Buffett's probably up at like 6 or something. So, and it's what works for you, but my the 7 hours are really important though, and then moving on from there. Yeah,
that's awesome. What do you think, as men or as guys, even the younger males, like boys, what do you think we do well and what do you think we don't do well in terms of mental health at the moment?
I'll start with what we don't do well, because it's probably a bigger list at the moment
in terms, I think, of a lot of people listening will be able to resonate with don'ts as well.
I think From a boy's perspective, we're taught not to cry. So you go down to a local park or something, you see a little, and you'll see when little girls fall down or cry and hurt themselves, they're very much comforted and it's okay. When a little boy falls down, it's very much like, don't cry. You don't cry. You're a boy and you're gonna grow up to be a man and you don't cry. And that message isn't taken as just a physical pain, it's taken as emotional too. So from a young age, we're conditioned to not cry, not feel, keep going, and that carries on. So like our 0 to 7 are our formative years, where we learn everything. It's when we're imprinted with all of our beliefs around the world. And then basically from 7 onwards is pretty much rewiring those beliefs, because we're often left with a lot of damaging beliefs. So in terms of what men aren't doing well, it's definitely that opening up, talking. But the more work I do in the space is men with other men actually open up a lot more. I find, not the problem or the issue, but I find where men don't open up as much is with their partners or with the opposite sex. Because we still have to have that, I'm the rock of this family, or I'm the rock and everything's okay, and the burden falls on me and I can handle it, don't worry. But if you get a bunch of guys in a room together, you'll find that they'll open up. They talk about their stuff big time. And I think for all the women listening, what they can do best is really hold space for their partners to open up, because and it's not going to happen overnight. It's something that takes a long time. But if you're sitting here listening, and you're like, gee, yeah, you're right. My partner never opens up to me. I don't know what's going on in his head, and I can't get anything out of him. It's because he's been conditioned not to for X amount of, for his entire life. So, some of the responsibility falls on the women to also hold space for our men because, and I love Brené Brown's work. She's done a lot about shame and vulnerability and their links. And she talks that there's a lot of like shame associated with that women put on men because they're like, hey, how's, you know, you might come home from a hard day at work and she goes, hey, how are you? And you might for the first time go, oh, you know what? Not too good. Work went pretty bad. And the wife goes, yeah, cool, cool. Oh, but listen to my day. Like, actually, you know what? This is what's going on in my day. And I'm actually, babe, I can't, actually, I need you to be there for me.
So
a lot of women are asking for their men to be more open, but then when they start, and it's a very timid step at the start, it's shut down straight away. Yeah. And so we're these are all learned behaviors. We've learned not to open up because you don't want us to. You say you do, but you don't. So this is a generalizing for sure. So it's holding space for our mates to open up, and then it's holding space for our partners to open up and making sure that they feel safe. And it's not about having a solution.
Yeah.
It's just about listening. That's another massive misconception around mental illness is if I ask my mate how he's doing, he says, no, not good. I have to have a solution to this problem. And I can tell you from experience, the best conversations I've ever had with my mates are when they just sit there and listen. And they might tell, and then they open up, and then we have that dialogue and we both talk about what's going on in our lives. That, like, most of the time we're just looking for someone to listen and hear, and we understand that you may not have the answers, and that's okay. But so I think in terms of what men do well is we are good at taking a lot of stuff on and continuing to do so and continuing on with our lives. You know, we are good at, we are strong. We are masculine, strong guys, and every single one of us. And so that is a very good trait to have. Don't get me wrong. I think a lot of people, when they start hearing about what we're talking about, is like, oh, I'm just going to become this soft, weak noodle of a man. And that's what you're telling me to do. It's like, no. You can take a lot from the Stoic period and say, one of my favorite quotes is, if you can endure it, endure it. And that doesn't mean taking on too much and then going and doing something that you'll regret and doing something stupid. It's saying, if I can meet a challenge that's tough and I can get through it, that is my responsibility to myself and those around me to do it. So it's finding that happy medium of going through life, because life is hard for everyone. It's tough, it's shit, it has its challenges. There's gonna be stuff that happens that you can't explain. But it's about cultivating a really strong resilience to that, whilst also saying I have healthy relationships in my life that allow me to be vulnerable, allow me to cry if I need to cry, and then, you know what, then the next day, but I'm good, or the next week or whatever, once I've done my my mourning or my healing, I'm good to go.
That's awesome. And this, you know, this might even be a conversation that I potentially have with your old man, but have you spoke to him much about the difference that he's noticed in the footy culture at teams from when he started to now, in terms of how much the guys open up in a team environment, and also the emphasis that the club puts on mental health and how the importance they put around it?
Yeah, I think the big thing that he always touches on is back when he was playing, it was part-time.
Yeah.
So you'd go to work, you'd work, come into training that night, train, and then kind of go. So you some of the guys are managing families, full-time job, and footy. So from what I understand is, the football club had very little responsibility or very little to do with what was going on in the footballer's life.
Each individual player.
Exactly. Whereas now you have, you know, 40 to 50 staff just in the football department. You've got like 10 coaches. You know, back he was saying, I asked him the other day, I was like, how many staff members would you have? And he'd be like, maybe 10, including the coaching staff. Now you've got 10 just coaches and then a massive football department. So the welfare of players are definitely at the forefront of each football club and done a lot, and come a long way from when he was playing, from what I understand. And we actually had at one of our events, we had Nick Riewoldt and Nathan Jones talk about that and how And how the football clubs have changed over their careers in terms of looking after players. And,
yeah.
you know, you have a dedicated player welfare manager at the at each football club. And, you know, the services on hand are pretty, pretty good from what I understand.
Yeah. Now, you briefly touched on it then, but the Roos Men's Wellness and Leadership Club, I've been to one of the events. I couldn't make the next one after that, but tell the listeners a bit about that and kind of what the whole purpose and goal is with it and what you guys are doing with
it. Yeah. So back on men's mental health was we went to my girlfriend at the time, Emma Maidment, she ran Mindful Mornings, which was like a yoga series event once a month. And we would go to these events and there'd be 70 people there and it'd be me and dad and 68 girls.
Yeah.
And we were like, why aren't guys looking after their wellness better? Like, why aren't they taking these more mindful approaches to their health and look, really looking after themselves that women tend to do a lot better? So that was our first event. We actually teamed up with Emma and did a mindful morning for our Roos Men's Club.
Yeah.
And we had 60 guys come, do 20 minutes of yoga, 10 minutes of meditation. I spoke a bit about just sustainable eating habits, not like the diet fad, sustainable eating.
Yep.
And then Dad did a Q&A with Tom Lonergan and cool. Tom's health journey, because as you may know, he had that, I think it was his kidney injury that almost killed him.
Yeah.
So we spoke about that, and that was our first event. That was last year in August and went really well received. So then we kind of just have been going event to event. So then we had another one with Wayne Schwoss. We had a dinner with 120 guys. And that's the one that Nick Riewoldt and Nathan Jones came and spoke at as well. And that was all around mental health. And again, that went really well. So we've just been going again and again. And the one that you came to was the Neuroscience of Leadership with Shelley Lazlett, a really amazing speaker our guys got a lot of value out of. So we try to, basically the whole idea around it is just normalizing some conversations that men need to be having, creating a safe space for them to get together and talk about things or listen to some speakers on wellness or leadership that they may not have heard. So our target market are like the, you know, the upper management guys running their own businesses, that kind of thing, that are under a lot of stress.
Taking under a lot of load.
Yeah, a lot of stress, and then have a big, I guess, sphere of influence. So we can only really get, you know, 60 to max 120 guys at each event. But if they all, you know, can impact 10 more people or 20 more or 100 more people if they run their own company, when they go back, then that's a lot larger. So these guys walk away with tools or new understanding. I know after the dinner, I was speaking to one of the guys there, and he was, and that was the one with Wayne Schwoss, and he almost brought me to tears when we were talking, and he said, I never like looked at it that way. Like when my daughter comes to me and she says, Dad, I'm not feeling good. I don't know what to do. Like I feel really down. I just tell her like, you'll be right. Like, you know, you can get through it. You'll be right. And he said to me, he's like, I'm going to go home and just give her a massive hug and let her know that I'm here for her. And I was just like shook. Like, because some of these very basic conversations, guys just don't know, like, or people just don't know that they need to be having them. And so if we're able to educate people, then, you know, it's just so fulfilling for us to be working in this space because, you know, like so many people need it and so few people look after them. Like we're very fortunate that we're in the health and fitness industry. Yeah, yeah. So even if we don't want to look after ourselves, we have to, if we want to make money.
To do, you know?
So we're in that environment where all of our mates are fit and healthy. We want to get a workout. I call you and we go get a workout in. So we're very fortunate where a lot of these guys have worked in corporate jobs for 30 years and they're now CEO. Their friends group aren't training as much. They're taking clients out to boozy dinners and that's a part of their job, and so they don't look at after themselves as much. And I'm very fortunate that my mum teaches meditation, so
it's awesome.
I've been able to meditate my whole life, whereas some of these guys are like, well, never heard of meditation up until 20 years ago. What is it?
So it's
we love it. Dad's really passionate about it too, and that obviously helps. And so we're just formulating where we take it now, because we want to branch out to more of a community thing and do some more with it.
That's awesome. And you were talking to me before about the fact that you're doing a bit of public speaking. Like what is that, is that similar target market, or are you getting out to schools, or what are you doing with that?
Yeah, so I'm trying to get out to as many schools as possible.
Yep.
Spoke at a school to the parents, actually, just around what we touched on before, around just vulnerability and why it's a strength and why we as for that one, it was why parents need to be more vulnerable with their kids rather than try to show up as like the all-knowing, I guess, parental figure of, well, I'm always right, and I, you know, and actually cultivating that relationship with our kids and then helping them work on their mental health. So that's something I'm super passionate about as well. And I've got 5 workshops coming up with a school with their year 5s and 6s around mental resilience and their leadership. And then, a couple companies are getting me in to speak on their mental health days as well. Just everything's, as I said, massive passion of mine is around that mental health and mental resilience as well. You know, like 44% of people will either have experienced a mental illness, are experiencing, or will someday experience some form of mental ill health. So just under 1 in 2 people. And so it's very much about building the resilience
and having
that,
the tools.
Yeah, and having the knowledge and tools that when life hits, I don't crumble and go to bed and sleep for an entire day like I did. It's life hits and okay, I'm okay. How do I deal with this and how do I keep moving forward?
I'll get you to do a bit of a plug in a minute once we wrap things up about where guys can
people
can find some more info about this and get in touch. But obviously, as you mentioned before, you and I are both in a similar space. So how much importance do you think eating well and forming good or healthy and consistent eating habits has on mental health?
Yeah,
because I know, you know, training wise, you said before, like you'll often go to someone, right? Have you been training this week? And is that affecting your mental health, whatever it is? But it can also be the nutrition side of things. How much of an impact do you think it has? And what is your kind of approach to making sure that you are, I guess, fueling your body for not only physical but mental health as well?
So we've all heard the expression that our gut is our second brain. And so 90% of our serotonin is produced in our gut, and that's what makes us the happy hormone, you know? So if 90% of our serotonin is produced in our gut, it's pretty important to be putting good stuff into our gut. So we know now, with the more research that's going into nutrition, that our gut health and all the microbiome and microorganisms living in our gut will pretty much dictate our mood and dictate a lot of our life. Back to that factory analogy, if I'm putting McDonald's and crappy food into my body, it's not going to feel good. You know, more research coming out on dairy, even more research just on eating a lot of meat, and a lot of research now coming out around plant-based diets, it's super important to be looking after our body in terms of what we eat. So I work off of when I'm not training for a boys' trip to Hawaii where I really want to look good. When I'm not doing that, I would live off of like an 80-20 split. So 80% nutritious food and 20% eat whatever I want. That might be like, you know, I like to intermittent fast. I like to fast in the morning just because it helps my, I feel better when I train on an empty stomach. And then I might have a man shake or a protein shake. But so if I have, you know, a good lunch, good dinner, 3 to 4 nights out of the week, then the other nights, or if I know that I'm going to have a drink on the weekend, I'll make sure that my week looks really good. So then on my weekend, I'm like, well, I've earned my weekend. I've looked after myself during the week. I can have a few vodka lime sodas and a burger, you know? So it's just, that's a big thing for me. It's just the 80-20 split. Like, I think you'll be so familiar with this, and I'm sure a lot of your listeners are too. Like, the diet fads and the crazes that are out there, like, it's confusing for people. Like, there's so much information out there that it's so important to get someone like yourself who knows what they're talking about, has the physique, or at least has the daily habits to show that he knows what he or she's talking about. And because so many people come to me like, and they're just confused. Keto, paleo, what do I do? Do I fast in the morning? Do I not? Am I allowed to eat carbs? Can I eat a lot of carbs? Can I eat, drink milk? Can I not eat? So it's so confusing now where it's really important to just go, you know, eat your veggies, get a good night's sleep, drink water, try to cut, if you're eating a lot of meat, try to cut back on 1 or 2 meals of meat and replace that with some more plant-based options. And that's a really good starting point for anyone, really.
Yeah, I think as well, on the same topic, like, we talk about you know, eating well is obviously going to play a big role on your mental health, but also at the same time, like you just said, if you're spending half your time that fucking confused and, you know, tossing out whether or not you should eat this or you shouldn't eat this and you're trying a new diet every single week, that's also really shitty for your mental health as well.
Exactly.
And that's a big, big part of what I do with my nutrition coaching is trying to get people to realize that it's not as hard as what they think it is. Get a better understanding about how to eat, and that's going to help reduce that cortisol level, which is going to help with your stress and your better sleep and everything in general just works a lot better.
Yeah, and when you're in that stress fight or flight state, your body, that's there because back in the day, we would be running away from something that was like a predator. So why we have the fight or flight response. So if I'm in that just around what I'm eating, it doesn't matter what, you can have a salad. If you're stressed out about that salad, your body is in a state where it's going, I need to hold on to fat because a lion's chasing me.
Yeah.
Whereas in today's society, there's no lion. It's just me overthinking a salad.
Yeah, yeah. And that's where all these tools come into play as well, like with the meditation, whether it's focusing on your breath.
Exactly.
And that's especially, as you said before, like your target audience with the Wellness and Leadership Club is often a lot of corporates and people that are taking on big loads. If your cortisol levels are up, and you're stressing you out of your mind, doesn't matter how well you're eating or how much you're training,
exactly,
it's going to be very, very difficult to see results.
And
that's obviously going to have a negative effect on your mental health as well.
One of my favorite quotes is, it doesn't matter what you put on your, it doesn't matter if you're eating all the kale and acai bowls in the world, if you don't fix what's going on in your head, then you're not going to be healthy.
Yeah,
and it's so true.
100%. That's a perfect way to wrap up today's chat.
Oh, geez, I've done well, haven't I?
Walked straight into it. All right, so where can the listeners find you, mate? And I'll make sure I've got these links in the show notes.
I'm massive on Instagram, at the only ruse.
Yep.
R-O-O-S. And then I've got a coaching website, dylanrusecoaching.com. And then if you're interested in the Ruse Men's Club, that website will be up and running soon as well, but for the meantime, you can just find that on my Dylan Ruse coaching website, and there's a little tab up the top right that'll take you through the men's club.
Unreal. All right, mate. Well, thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you really very much.
Appreciate it.
Enjoyed it. Mate.
Guys, if you've taken some value from today's episode, regardless, you know, I'd hope that a lot of the listeners today are not just male. I hope it's a lot of female as usual as well. But if any of you guys have taken some value from today's show, which I'm sure you have, make sure you screenshot today's episode, post it up on your Instagram story for me within the next 30 seconds. Tag myself, tag Dylan. We'd love to get some feedback, and hopefully we'll do another episode in the very near future.
Yes, absolutely.
Thanks very much.